Blog Talk Radio.
Jesus, draw me ever nearer as I labor through the storm you have called me.
Live, Allie.
Hello, welcome to Blog Talk Radio tonight, February 14th, holiday for lovers and those who wish well for everybody else that are in love. And we have a wonderful call lineup tonight with Dr. Lolly and our wonderful guest from Canada and our host, Nathan, right here in Orangeburg, South Carolina. Dr. Lolly, are you with us?
Yes, hello. Ma'am, I am.
All right.
I'm ready, Miss Ida. Good
take
evening, everyone. Happy Valentine's Day, or maybe I should say happiest Valentine's Day. I can truly say to all of you are my Valentines, because each and every one of you that interrupted your night of love to be on this radio show tonight has warmed my heart, because it lets me know how much you love and celebrate me. So why not turn the show tonight into a Valentine's party for all of us? I want to kind of deviate from our regular script of environmental health to really talk about having an environmental health of the heart. Since this is Valentine's Day, I want to talk about the five languages of love. the five languages of love. If you've never heard about the five languages of love, then I'm going to give you a workshop series tonight. Because it's really love that sustains us and gives us the passion to pursue what we do, and that is advocating for environmental safety, going green, as some people would say, or putting forth the extra effort to make sure our families are safe, our workplaces are safe, our farms are safe, the communities that we live in are safe, and that we're diligent every day to be aware of the radiation in our environment, both radioactive gases such as radon, as well as the electromagnetic non-ionizing radiation of electrical and wireless devices that are in our homes, in the daily appliances that we use, the big refrigerators, the microwaves, the stoves, the lamps that give off microwave or electromagnetic frequencies that can do the same to our bodies as microwave ovens. But it's the passion that drives us. And as, you know, we gather on this radio show every single week, I want to just interrupt a little bit to give a special Valentine's greeting to our engineer, Mr. Jonathan Hill from Orangeburg, South Carolina, and to his and to the other angel in the city down there, Miss Ida Morris, whose love strengthens us all. We stand on their shoulders because it's their vision that brings us together on this radio show tonight, their vision and hope for our nation and our world to be a safer place. And to my Canadian family, to my favorite farming health physicist, Mario, who's a weatherman who has taught me so much about the weather's influence on environmental health, and to the angels, you know, of the lake, Mr. Rod, Groom, and Lynn, who have just started a work powered by love and concern for all the people that live in their community, and advocating and screening their homes and educating and doing just a fierce work. To my colleague and bishop-elect, we got a new environmental bishop coming in our network, Elder David Lawrence Clark, who gave me 30 years of research, and he listens, he sneaks on this show and listens in. Elder Clark, if you're on tonight, I want to give a special shout out to you. To my colleague at Oxford University, Dr. Eric Lamont Gregory, who taught me so much about radiation diseases of the blood and who's listening in periodically. I was just in shock that I didn't even think that he read his emails. But thank you to Dr. Gregory, if you're on the line tonight. To my colleagues in Atlanta, Georgia, who I just got off the phone with about an hour ago, who are so excited about our project and rebirthing it in Atlanta, Georgia. We have maybe 9 houses down there that we've done in Georgia and another 9 or so in Florida. So if you're on the show tonight, I give a shout out to Miss Israel Mann and her colleague, Mr. Steele, who are in construction down there in Atlanta and refabbing homes. And she's actually an architect, a landscaping architect, just a brilliant young woman. And she happens to be there when I won the gold medal in 2011 for the United States and saw the fervor and the fire that was ignited in that place as everybody was singing about our flat batteries. And so this is kind of a gala event tonight because, you know, I feel like that we all love one another. We have a common ground, and that is making our lives. And we can celebrate that we are so happy tonight because we are adding value to our lives, value to each other's lives, values to the communities we live in, and values to the world. And so we want to talk about Dr. Gary Chapman, who is a theologian, was trained at Moody Bible Institute, a graduate of Wake Forest University in North Carolina, and he actually lives in North Carolina, but he's world-renowned for being an angel in that city. and helping people to have a healthy environment of the heart, because he studied all these people and he saw there was just a tremendous need for people to be able to love one another and touch one another in ways that transformed heaven to their earth. And so he talked about five love languages. And I want to focus on that tonight, because if we can strengthen the way we love, we can strengthen our purpose in life, and we can transcend our world. My morning began this morning at 7:30 on the Affirmation Nation line with these young millionaires out of California who get up every morning and say, I'm so happy because I'm adding value to life. And they have a whole list of affirmations they proclaim. So I'm going to give you a brief overview of these five languages that some people believe you love them. Number one, their love languages is when you give them a gift. If you're not giving them gifts, they don't think you love them. Some people's love language is words. They need words of affirmation and encouragement. Now, as a physicist, as a nurse physicist, I like this one because this is measurable, what the frequency of a word does in the body, but I won't deviate. I'll continue with the overview. The third one, for those of you that are writing this down, some people feel that you love them when you spend time with them. The quality of time that you spend, yes, that's right, turning off your cell phone, turning off the TV, and you take intentional time to look someone in the eye and talk to them about their day. The fourth one is acts of service. And that really underscores why we're on this radio show tonight. Because it's the power of our love and our passion that moves us in service to our family members, to our neighbors, and to our friends. And the last one is physical touch. And we know how being intimate creates a special bond. It creates a special language of communication that allows you to know a person in a most intimate way. So having said those five, I want to now just dive in, because this area, most of the relationships that end up in divorce or end up in separation can be found in one of these five. It's amazing in our culture, we have so many holidays where we're giving gifts and we're celebrating gifts. And just as being a nurse, in my basic observation, because I was a home care nurse for over 17 years, and watching it, going into and out of people's houses at Christmas time, I actually encountered families where the wife may be celebrating Christmas, but the husband is in the garage or downstairs in the basement, and he refused to celebrate Christmas. And when I inquired of the reason, I wasn't trying to be in people's business, but there's something about being the nurse, coming to your house. People make you part of the family, and they'll just tell you everything. But it stemmed back to their childhood, where some families were very poor. They didn't have resources to give the children gifts. And so every time Christmas came around, even though these were successful people, I mean, people that had yachts and big cars and big, you know, houses, but the child in them was so broken because they never received gifts, that they felt paralyzed at Christmas time because they felt either the gift that they received was going to be inferior, or they didn't want to put an expectation on their spouse or their children or family members for a gift and then be greatly disappointed when they didn't get one. And I think this is really a good exercise for people to have when they're being friends and when they're courting. Not only do you need to know people's gifts, the things that they want, are they a person that has equated their love with how big the gift is or what the gift is. You know, it was amazing to me. I was talking to a group of men about 3 weeks ago about how even they size up the women that they date or the women that they marry based upon the decor that they decorated themselves with. One guy said he was so impressed with his now wife because she was wearing a $30,000 watch. It didn't matter that she didn't have a house. She was in a very small efficiency apartment. She had a few designer clothes. But the fact that she could wear a $30,000 watch was so valuable to him. And so his expectation was if she had that kind of taste, that she was going to be somehow working two or three jobs to give him a $30,000 watch. I mean, it's just amazing how people begin to process over what you do. It's amazing how people try to surmise your wealth or your fortune based upon the toys that they see you with, the cars you drive, the houses you live, the neighborhoods you live in. I had the opportunity to go to Newport Beach, California, where Kobe Bryant and Oprah Winfrey and a lot of America's billionaires live. And I met a very successful businessman. He was a venture capitalist. And we were all sitting in the parking lot, or pulled up to the parking lot, rather. And in came this little kind of like a hoopty car. I'm just calling it hoopty because it was really old. It was like antique, and, you know, there was nothing special about it. You know, it was not like it was detailed and had all this special finery on it. It was just an old truck. And here this man with all this money living on a $2 million yacht pulls in with the oldest car. I mean, this car had to be 40 years old. And people were like, well, he has more money than that. He should be driving in here in a new car. He should be coming in a limousine. And so we've become so materialistic that some of our children don't even believe we love them if we don't give them a gift. And not even what kind of gift. Is it branded? Does it have, you know, a Gucci brand on it? It's got to have the top brands in order for our children to even want to wear this. We've gotten so far away from dealing with our needs till we're just advocating our wants. And now our children don't even feel loved if they don't get gifts from us. And that's some people's love language. So how do you feel? I'm going to pause right now. Go run and get a piece of paper and pencil. Because I really believe that these words are going to bring a lot of healing, a lot of insight to how we're loving. So if you are dating somebody that you feel you have to give them gifts all the time before they feel loved and celebrated by you. Now, I'm one, I love to give gifts. You know, I give my children, even though my sons were 5 and 7 years old, I even gave them Father's Day cards because I told them I want to celebrate your life. I want you to know that fatherhood is a celebration. I gave them meaningful gifts. And in fact, when they got older, because their lives became so personalized, the way we did Christmas was we went shopping all together. And they went and got the gifts they wanted, and they brought it to the place that I wanted, where I was, and then I selected which gifts I wanted to give them. So I knew I had 100% batting average, that they would get a gift that they wanted that would bring them joy and celebration. So if you have someone that needs to be celebrated by gifts, and I think we all should have occasion of gift giving, that's just the way we affirm one another. That's the way we celebrate our life. But if you can't figure out what kind of gifts your spouse wants or the person that you love, your significant other, that's a good way to find out. Just go shop, you know, window shopping. Go store hopping. Have them show you the colors that they like, the designers that they like, the gifts that they like. So if you have to love them with a gift, you're going to have 100% batting average. So gifts, know if your friend, your wife, your husband, your children, how they define affirming them with gifts and the styles they like and the things that are important to them. Okay, so let's move to the next love language. We're strengthening our hearts. And this is probably my favorite one. I love loving people with words. Words are so powerful. The more I work in this arena of physics and dealing with energy of water and these frequencies of these flat batteries and the bioharmonizers and the nanobio balancers and the EGBs for the eyes and the Q1s and QWs and all this different frequency, the more I pray, the more I interact with all of you. All of you have said to me words that have been so powerful that they sustained my hope in this journey. Because we had to finance our own way. You know, until we got the NASA machine, we didn't even have a hope to step in an arena to get any type of grant because we couldn't validate the technology. And even though they said there's grants out there to do research to validate the technology, we applied for 4 of them, and we were not valued. Our technology, when people saw it, they said, there's no way this technology can do all that you say that it can do, and therefore they found other things that they felt were more valuable than our technology to invest in. But it is a scientific fact that people who speak positive words vibrate to a higher lifestyle. It's a scientific fact that if you curse your children, you will take the energy and the life force out of them. If you curse your spouse, you can weaken them, weaken their immunity. You can cause them to become so depressed they become dysfunctional. And you can actually cause them to have diseases if they internalize the words you are saying. I really have great admiration for this young man called, his name is Hazik, and I don't know what his last name is, but he's the gentleman that does this show, Affirmation Nation. And he starts off by saying, I'm so happy. Just the proclamation of joy, of happiness in and of itself creates such a strong vibration in your body that you become a magnet to attract to you positive people, positive experiences, positive things. And by telling your family members that I love you, men, you want to be really successful with your wife, your daughters, the women you love, be intentional about visualizing, seeing them. You know, the Zulu African tribe, and we talked about this. When you walk into the tribe, they say, I see you. For a woman to be seen is one of the highest honors. It's one of the highest love languages that you can give her. To intentionally say, babe, your hair is so beautiful. It's so radiant. It's so glistening. It's so sharp. You know, I love you. You look fabulous in that red outfit. Being complimentary, being affirming. And by the same token, women, you know, men need to know that they're loved and celebrated and they are our hero. Be intentional about seeing people. That's the greatest honor you can give a person. It's to see them as a creation of the Most High God. That's why I tell people I don't have to deal with racism. Because everybody is like a candy jar. Humanity is like a candy jar. Everybody has a different flavor and a different thrill for your life. Everybody is bringing a gift to you. Everybody has a purpose for being in your life and in your journey. And when you see them through the eyes of God, you see that they were intentionally created because he had a purpose for their life. And you could actually be part of that purpose by affirming them, by seeing them, by appreciating them, by celebrating them, by supporting them, by laboring with them, by affirming them, saying, I believe in you. I can remember one of the most profound experiences of my life. My mother telling me that I was the most incredible woman she had ever met, because she thought adopting a child was like, you know, sainthood. She said, how do you love a child that came out of the womb of someone else? And I told her, I don't know not to love children because I love all children. Children don't have to qualify to be loved by me. And I learned something very special about children. I don't know how I've been reading the Bible for all these years. And I never saw this. I read over it or read around it. But somehow I found myself this morning in Psalm chapter 8, verses 1 and 2 that blew me my socks totally off. I have even a new passion for children, because this is what I didn't know. When you teach children and infants to praise God and honor God, they are equipped with an anointing from God that shields you from the enemies of the virtue God has placed in your life. Imagine, we should go get every child we know. When we got a problem, just go get all the children and the babies on the street and let them sing and watch the intervention that happens in your life. You know, we in our culture, we oppress children so much. The suicide rates are just going through the roof because we don't want to engage them in purpose. We want to tell them they're too immature, too insignificant, too stupid to have vocational skills at young ages. But in undeveloped worlds, there are children that run nations. There are children that direct farming enterprises. There are children running orphans. It's amazing how these children are stepping into adult roles to help keep their communities together. And so in the love language of affirming words, we can begin by taking the choice word. It's a scientific fact. If I took Mario and stood him in front of me right now, said, Mario, make a tree, I'm going to muscle response test you. If I said, Mario, I hate you, just those spoken words would knock out his polarity and he would lose energy. But if I said, Mario, you're my hero, I love you so much, I would create a fortress in him that would strengthen his muscle, and he would be able to resist any pressure that I'm putting on his arm and remain balanced. Now, I don't want you to just take my word for it. This is Valentine's Day. You can take your significant other and say, baby, I love you. You are a celebration of life. And two-finger Bedort test them. See how strong they are. And then on the contrast, say, babe, I hate you. You got toe jam. Your toes smell. I don't want to be around you. Even something that seemingly insignificant, nobody wants to feel rejected. Nobody wants to feel unloved. If you muscle test them or two-finger Bedort test them, you will see they'll have energy loss. I was talking to some people who were fortunate enough to be invited to Harpo Studios and have lunch with Oprah Winfrey. They were part of her television show, and then afterwards, because they came from Capitol Hill, she took them all out to lunch or dinner or brunch or whatever it was. They said that she intentionally, the way that she became so beloved in American Sweetheart was that she intentionally looks at you and she finds something about you that she really likes. And she will affirm that. I like your blue sweater, or I like those shoes that you're wearing. I like those glasses. You're a genius. I like how you talk. I like your conversation. She intentionally engages all her clients, her guests, with positive affirmations. What if we started just looking for the good in humanity? What if we had a president that intentionally looks for the good? Yes, he has to discern evil, but for every negative situation that he has to address or speaks to, he would find two positive situations to speak to create hope, to create strategy, to help people understand that where there's a goal and there's a plan, you can then define steps to help you to get from point A to point B. And now we know we can power the situation by giving every word, positive word of affirmation. And that's what I try to bring to the show every Tuesday when we're on here. I try to give you a word of encouragement, a word of love, a word of life, a word of vision, a word of direction. Sometimes goals, sometimes plans, and often steps, because we are creating an industry. I'm working with a group of business developers now, and they are just rolling this forward. They're just getting our infrastructure, helping us build capacity for financing and for enterprising the manufacturing to the next phase. And it's been so amazing that, you know, part of my anxiety was dealing with all these complex documents that have to be developed. And so one of them saw that and said, well, you know, Dr. Lyon, what we're going to do is put you on a one-page journey, because we know if we can get the basic components out of you, the conceptual framework, then we can align consultants to help you crunch these things all the way out. And so we are making progress. We were moving forward because, number one, somebody saw that I don't have a business background. And that was part of my handicap, because there are complexities of doing things when you're positioning for funding and you're positioning to bring partners to your venue. But they began to nurture me. They began to affirm me. And even though we met with some physicists from Harvard, they had to evaluate us for funding merit, you know, whether or not what they were going to invest and how much and if they were going to invest. And there were some very intimidating, some words that were spoken that was kind of, you know, as one gentleman said, they were kind of brass, because we didn't have these big million-dollar studies that they wanted to have to be able to put large amounts of money in us. Initially, you know, it hit when the words were spoken, but I was able to come back with, you know, we have not had that many cheerleaders along the way. We've had to take 80% of what we've raised and turn it back into the company to be able to move things through the venue, through the processes that it has to go through to be able to maintain momentum. I mean, if I could get resources, I probably have six more patents on technology that I can't even get out of my head, because once you open up a patent, you know, that's like almost $100,000 a year just for legal fees, especially when you're doing an international patent defense, because you got to file in all these countries, and then you've got to answer all these countries that write you back and say, well, there's a technology like this over in this place and that place. And, I mean, it's a really tedious process. But staying positive, working the positive, staying focused, proclaiming your joy and happiness, getting up and saying every morning, I am so happy because I'm alive. I've been given another day to have the breath of life, to increase the value in my neighbor. When I think about the people that are walking, brain tumors gone, because we've been affirming and loving and speaking and seeking and serving. And now we're going to turn it up a notch, because we're going to get up every morning and start rejoicing with positive words over the people that we love. Third one, quality of time. This is what I'm finding, that we are so busy being busy. And with cell phones that allow us to access Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and our emails, that if you go to a restaurant, just go to a restaurant and look around and observe. People are half eating their dinner with one hand that's texting and scrolling the social media venues. People are not even talking. So we've, in my family, in my network of friends, we've started doing something that's deliberate and intentional. We've started turning our cell phones off at dinner time, at driving time, and talking. When my granddaughter is in the car and she's with me, I turn my cell phone all the way off. And I intentionally say to her, you are so precious to me. Nana just wants to talk to you. I'm going to turn this cell phone off. I don't even want to hear it ring, because I want to hear everything you want to tell me. I want to know about your friends. I want to know about school. I want to know about what you're doing. We got to be intentional about the quality of time that we're sharing with the people we love. When our husband or wife comes in the door, we have to be intentional about loving them. You know, in my African culture, when I'm with my tribe has a saying that is really kind of took me by surprise. When I say my tribe, I'm talking about the Ijo tribe of West Africa. Ijos are primarily fishermen. They're very peaceful people. The Ijo tribe of Africa has less than 2% divorce. There's a lot of intention with spending quality of time. And it just amazed me. When the husband or the wife comes home, they stand. They go to the door to greet them with a standing ovation. And they say, welcome. And I was amazed. I was in a business office with one of the gentlemen, and his son was being dropped off by the driver. Someone went to private school, and somebody dropped him off at the office so he could take him home. We were in a business meeting. There were six people there. The father was seated at the head table in the boardroom. And when he saw the son enter the building and come down the hall, he stood up to greet his son when his son entered the room. He excused himself, and he greeted his son. He said, welcome. And the Ijo people believe that you should master wealth without material things. You should master the art of kindness. You should master the art of respectful regard. You should have time just for talking, just for sharing, just for investigating the things that your spouse loves. Time for walking in the park, time for walking on the beach, time for ministering and engaging one another. I was talking to this young couple, and they're both business owners. And the wife's business, the husband didn't think was that important. She's a cupcake maker. And the husband's business, you know, he has some kind of delivery service. And so they were, like, competing with one another. they were living, I mean, they were totally isolated and separated. When the husband needed help and the wife had time, she didn't want to help him because he didn't want to help her. She's like, well, you know, if I could just get him to drop off some cupcakes when he's going in the same direction of my cupcake delivery, you know, but he won't accommodate me by 15 minutes. They had a war zone going on. And I told them, I said, listen, at the end of the business day, the monies and the revenues that you're making come to the same house for the same goals, paying the mortgage, putting food on the table, et cetera, et cetera. So how about if you adjust your schedules? How about if you carve out 30 minutes a day? And the wife, you're going to serve your husband's business for 30 minutes. And husband, you're going to serve your wife's business for 30 minutes. And you're going to build a camaraderie so that there is a affirmation that you're important to me and I want to affirm my love for you in serving your business for a half hour, an hour, whatever the situation should be, so that you feel the rhythm of each other's life in the way that God has given you creative force. When one of the things in the tribe that I learned to do was called the covenant of desire. I think everybody should have learned about the covenant of desire. Now, what is it? We had to sit down and write out at the beginning of the year, you had to write out 10 things that you desired, that you liked, that was part of the rhythm of your life or that a goal that you were seeking for that year. And wives had to give their 10 list of desires to the husband, and the husband had to give his 10 list of desires to the wife. And now the first task of the day was to instill each other's desire, to inquire of each other what tasks you needed done. And so I made a covenant with my husband that the first task of the day, his thing was making the herbal tea in the morning. My thing is I drink 20 ounces to a quart of water in the morning before my day begins, before I eat anything. I have to have water because I feel like it just ministers to me. And so my task was to always make his tea in the morning. His task was to always make sure my water was there in the morning. Something that simple made me feel the rhythm of his life, made me affirm him every day that he was the most sacred person in my life, that I desired and I served. And it gave me the same feeling that I was the most sacred person in his life that I desired, that he desired and that he served. It made loving and serving intentional. It enhanced the quality of time because we use time to make each other feel rich and affirmed and appreciated. And it was phenomenal. And I've carried that into my relationship with my children, my colleagues that I work with that labor for me. I try to be intentional about affirming your presence in my life, giving thanks for you, being deliberate in seeing the gifts that you bring to my life. Because in that way, we affirm, we strengthen one another for this journey. In that way, we empower one another to move forward and to move somebody else forward. In that way, we give each other the confidence and the courage to do the unthinkable, to take something that looks like a postage stamp and have the audacity to confront people and say, I can help you. I can add value to your life. I've got this nanobio balancer, and it does amazing things. Yes, it's an electrical safety device, but it's an energy shield, and who knows what miracle it might bring to your life. So the quality of time how we move time, how we affirm time. And so Joe Osteen said something interesting on Sunday this week. He was talking about turning up the volume of love in your relationships, that nobody should get more understanding from you than your spouse and your children, your family. That your wife, women have to be told 1,000 times a day, some women, how much you love them, how much you celebrate them. And I know that sounds gory, but there are some women that the quality of time with you, their love language is affirmation of words, and they want to hear your words, your affirmation of spending time with them. And speaking in that, affirming them in the quality of time. Men have to know that they are the hero. And men are the hero. Because when you think about the dynamics of how we work together as men and women, husbands and wives, you know, to make family, sustain the wealth of family, the integrity of family, the health of family, the safety of family, it's a miracle. I mean, it takes teamwork, makes the dream work. That whole transformation of using time to build, you know, team functions and to set forth goals and plans in families, because it's important to set forth a goal every year for you to achieve as a couple and as a family, so that you strengthen and unify your oneness. Time is important. And so you need to sit down and set some goals, set some plans, direct some steps so that you maximize your time. Because they say to fail the plan is to plan to fail. And if there's anything that I would do differently in my life, I wish I would have learned goals and plans and steps early on in life. I think all children need to be taught the language of goals, plans, and steps by the time they're 4 years old. They need to have two goals at four that they're identifying. They need to know how to have hobbies and interests to so that their time is directed in a personable and vocational impacting, skill developing way. By letting our children sit up in front of the TV all day long, on these electronic games all day long, and not develop any strategies for vocational skills and life management and family management, is to doing them a disservice. And that's why we have so much suicide going on. We had a young couple who was so tragic. Young man, 30 years old with 3 children. It was like he was so dependent upon his girlfriend to keep a roof over his head, and it was Section 8 and food stamps to feed him, that she no longer wanted to take care of him like his mother. He killed her and killed himself and left all the children orphaned. The quality of time is something we got to rethink, because in the way we spend our time, We're able to direct the way we love. We're able to secure the way we love. We're able to fortify the way we love. We're able to give a future in the way we love, and we're able to leave a legacy just by how we monitor, manage, and master our time. Acts of service. My bishop preached this sermon from Luke chapter 5. I want everybody to write this down. Luke chapter 5 in the Bible. This story is so amazing. One of the most incredible acts of service in developing a loving relationship among peers. But the information about it can transcend time. Acts of service. So here's the backdrop. In Luke chapter 5, the story is in Israel. There's a lake in Israel called Lake Genesaret. Lake Genesaret. It's a lake, but it has the power of a sea. If you got on a bicycle, you could ride all the way around the lake. It's 35 miles around the lake. And this ancient lake has had so many names. Matter of fact, I don't know how I overread it, but I didn't even recall that the name of the lake was Lake Genesaret, because other writers in the Bible called it the Sea of Galilee. And Genesaret means paradise of Galilee. But what's so unique about this lake? Globally, it is the second, it has this, it's a freshwater lake. It's the largest lake in Israel. But it has the second depth. In other words, it's the second most deepest lake in the world. The deepest lake in the world is the Dead Sea. This is the second deepest lake. And so the story is that you have Jesus, and he's been baptized, and now he's going forth proclaiming the word of God, but he doesn't have any disciples. He comes to this lake. People follow him to this lake. And he has such a huge crowd that lakes were like the Wi-Fi of that time. Water is so profound, it amplifies sound. So this crowd was so huge that Jesus walks to the lake to be able to get on the water so he can enhance his visibility to the people he's talking to, and he can use the energetics, the physics of the lake, to amplify the sound. Well, he gets to the lake, and the fishermen are all walking around with their lips hanging down and these long faces because they've been out in the hot sun, and they've been trying to fish all early morning. They didn't catch a thing. And here their boats are sitting on the side of the lake. And so Jesus walks up and says, "Who owns these boats? I want this one right here." And he points to the boat that was owned by Simon Peter. And Peter, he says, "Man, I need your boat. I got to preach to these people." And Peter says, "Well, you know, okay." He said, "Can you push me out on the water with this boat?" So Peter pushes him out in the water. Jesus preaches his sermon. And then they pull this boat back in, and Jesus looks at all of them, sad face. They're hungry. There's no food to take home to the families. There's no fish to sell to make money. And so he tells them, he said, "Listen." He says, "Take your boats and your nets and push it and then throw them down on the other side." And they're like, "Man, you're crazy. We've been fishing on this lake for years. We know this lake. And we know that what you're saying is ridiculous. But I want to draw a circle around an event, a profound act of service. You had a spiritual leader that wanted to serve the people with the word of inspiration. He wanted to speak words in them to empower their life, to strengthen them with hope so that they could go forth and do good in the earth. And he asked for a boat, and a fisherman serves him. Profound act. Here's somebody that's trying to release a word to do good, and somebody comes to serve him, to help him to release that word to inspire. And it creates a boomerang. These words were so powerful, that I believe we can, this is a science experiment that we can reenact. If we were up on your head, Lake Rod, I believe we could push a boat out in the middle of that lake, and I believe we could say 100 of the most powerful words. And I believe that it would stimulate such a life force in that lake that it would mobilize and energize resources in that lake to come up around that boat. I believe this can be scientifically repeated. I believe the words that Jesus spoke were so powerful that the fish who had gone down to the bottom of the lake, because this lake, Genesaret, did not feed into a river. It did not feed into an ocean. It's a contained body of water. So there was not like while Jesus was preaching, fish came up from the river or they came in from the ocean. No, I believe these fish were down in the bottom. But when he proclaimed all those powerful words on that water, I believe he mobilized those fish up to the top. And when they came up, I believe there was something about the boat that he was in that mobilized the fish to the boat, and it was so powerful. It was like a magnet. It kept those fish in the boat. So when Peter threw down the net, it was so many fish that they had to bring all the boats on the shore and put the fish in them, and their nets almost broke. There was such an overflow of fish. There was such a blessing that came out of this act of service that Peter fell down on his face. He knew he was in the presence of a righteous person. And he's like, I'm not even worthy, man. I'm not worthy for any of this kind of blessing. Yeah, because you don't know. I'm like the baddest dude in the city. I mean, I'm the one they need to be putting out. And Jesus basically has so much compassion on him. Now, what does that have to do with today? I've listened for over a year to your testimony of acts of kindness and servitude. And we've all talked about the lack and limitation, the struggles overcoming, our strategies to move forward, to bring in a harvest. But this is what I believe with all my heart. I believe we're in such an anointed season right now. Because we serve so many people out of our little strength and our few resources, we've given away hundreds of dollars worth of this technology to people, some that we knew and some that we didn't know. We've driven miles after miles to go to people who were listless and lifeless and speak a word of encouragement. We've knocked on doors one time and two times and three times until we've made our neighbors to know they were in imminent danger because the radiation was too high to do something about it. I believe that our acts of kindness have not been overlooked. I believe that we were all intentionally purposed by God to be on this mission and on this assignment. And we've been waiting against great odds, but we've been serving one another. But now, I believe with all my heart, there's so much. Did you hear Dr. Ben Carson say that one of his four running programs will be Healthy Smart Homes in the state of Ohio alone? $30 billion just got allocated for renovation of public housing. I just got off the phone with a company in Atlanta that gets grant money from the state to put energy efficient technologies in low income homes, all kinds of homes. I hear the fish in the lake multiplying, and I believe and I prophesy that because we have been serving one another without complaints, even though people stole our technology, we paid for products that never came, people held our money up, all the stuff that we have journeyed through. But because we've been faithful with our little strength, with our few resources, the harvest is coming in so huge. We have got to be intentional about getting to Health Canada, because Health Canada recognizes idiopathic environmental illnesses, and I believe that they will pay for the technologies that we use and the protocols that we use, and that those of you who have businesses in Canada, I believe that the Canadian government, since they've already certified our Alpha unit as LEED Platinum, LEED certification, or LEED Certified Platinum, it already has the UL certifications and classifications that's needed. I believe that Canada, the fish have come in and they're getting ready to overflow and break down the boats and strain your nets. So we have to find out where we can get a business development organization that deals with importing and exporting and U.S.-Canadian relations so that we can begin to access these fish, these lakes, these rivers, where these resources are for us to go in and mitigate houses. In all my years of listening to the story, that first story of Jesus meeting Peter, his first disciples, Peter, James, and John, they were so moved by that act that they said, man, we want to follow you and become fishers of men. They became the first three disciples. And every time I get on this show and I listen to who's on here that's with me in the struggle, we're creating a whole new industry. Our labors will not be in vain. Because of the resources you are documenting, these self-reporting clients that are letting you know how they're progressing day in, day out, week after week, we are archiving a whole new beginning. And so, the last one, be diligent in acts of service to continue to carry out our mission to save ourselves and save our families one step at a time, one family at a time. And last but not least, physical touch. And as a nurse, I probably have a different perspective because, you know, when you start talking about love, you start talking about being touchy-watchy, that can light a fire to lead, you know, to a night of passion. Physical touch is different for every person. And that's why, you know, in the work that we do, we know you have to ask permission to touch people because some people don't like you in their intimate personal space. When it comes to loving, if you've been with, if you're in love with someone who doesn't like to be hugged a lot or doesn't like to be physically touched a lot, that's something that you really need to be open and transparent about. I dated a young man for 11 years through high school, all the way through undergrad, through graduate school. We were of two different cultures. His culture, they didn't touch a lot. And he didn't like me touching him a lot. And I'm African-American culture, but I've been sanctified by corn power. I grew up in the farmland where everybody was hugging on each other and high-fiving and laboring in the fields together. And not that I had to get out there and do too much laboring in the field, but the cornfield was next to me, but I sure did work in my mother's garden. We worked side by side, and we was just a hugging family. We just hugged all the time. And trying to hug with this brother, you know, he wasn't into hugging, you know. It had to be, you had to be behind closed doors and two padlocks. And so, even though we dated, we grew up as children together. We were engaged for 11 years. We got 90 days before the marriage, and I said, you know, we went to Pizza Hut. I don't know whether it was the Coke or the pizza, but it gave us power to be transparent. And I said to him, I said, you know, we've been friends, and we began as friends, and now we're engaged, and we're getting ready to be married. And I said, and I don't foresee us really being able to operate in that role because I don't want to be starved of affection, and you don't want to be touched. I think what's real is that I need somebody that's like a bear to love to hug and love physical touch and stimulation. Because I like to swing from your neck. You know, I might want to square dance with you. I might want to give you a bear hug. I'm a specialist in bear hugs. And I said, and for you now to want to be hugged, and that's problematic for you, we would be frustrated all the time. I said, so this is what we're going to do. We're going to pray. And I'm going to pray for you to meet somebody that doesn't like to be hugged, that's just as cool with you physically, and I'm going to pray for somebody that likes to be hugged. And we separated 90 days. We called off our marriage. People were crying. My goodness, our parents were crying. Everybody just knew we were going to be married. But we became each other's best friends for life. And that was a great decision that we made. Because physical touch is so important. It's some people's lifeline. If they don't get touched, do you know babies? They did a study in England about these babies that were born and they were orphans. And they didn't get rocked. They didn't get touched. They didn't get physical stimulation. They died prematurely. And people are in relationships, and either the husband is really affectionate and the wife doesn't want to be touched, or the wife is really affectionate and the husband doesn't want to be touched, and they're suffocating in these relationships. And they end up doing these god-awful evils to one another to the demise of their relationship and to the destruction of the heart and soul of their children. So physical touch is real, and that's a real conversation. You need to know your need for physical touch. You know, it was interesting also in my African tribe. Men were taught to interview women, to interview them about do they like to be touched, how they manage their finances, how they manage their anger, was they pot throwing women, you know, how did they manage their finances. Women were taught to do these same interviews. And before you could marry someone, they had to come by recommendation. You had to interview every sibling that they had and their parents, and maybe an aunt or uncle. And then there were 9 elders of the tribe that may elect to interview them too. You didn't just roll up in there and marry somebody. Marriage was so sacred. It was done by affirmation and witness of many people who knew you and many people who knew the person that you was going to marry. And maybe that's why to this day the Ijo tribe has less than 2% divorce. Because love was intentional. Love is intentional. And so I hope this little segment, you can go get the book, The 5 Languages of Love by Gary Chapman out of North Carolina. I recommend everybody watch it. There's zillions of videos on YouTube. But my declaration, I decree and declare that every single person on this line tonight, on this show tonight, is anointed to increase in love. There's greater love has no one. Or greater love, there's no greater love than a person who will lay down their life for another person. There's no greater grace than seeing a person in need and you pressing through your comfort zone to meet their need. There's no greater experience in life than to experience happiness. And happiness is a choice. You can be happy no matter what. No matter what's going on, I've become intentional in not letting anything or anyone take my joy away. Because all of us deserve great lives because we serve one another. We affirm one another, ourselves, and our families. We are worshipers with thanksgiving unto God. And because we aspire to have the best life, not just for ourselves, but for our children, our spouses, our neighbors, our friends, our communities, our nation, our world. That gives us the rare opportunity to have a quantum experience where the overflow of blessings is so many and so much that everybody around us gets blessed. Everybody that was around Peter on the day he showed an act of kindness to Jesus got blessed with an overflow. And so I leave you with the choice blessings of heaven, that your lives will be strengthened to not just find a unique language of love unique to you, but to actually operate in all languages of love. Be diligent. Be hilarious in giving the gift. You know, that thing hit me so that I went to Red Lobster for lunch. Some friends invited us to Red Lobster. And there was a lady that came in there. She was 100 years old. And we couldn't believe how fabulous this lady looked at 100 years old. So, of course, the whole restaurant is joining in with the staff and singing to her. And I said, I want to be intentional. I want to do something that makes her feel the thunder of joy. I looked in my wallet to see what I had. I pulled out a $20 bill. Not that that's not anything. But I said, I don't know this lady, but I want her to feel that I celebrate with her 100 years of living, and I want her to feel some joy out of me to her. I just kind of tried to indiscreetly, you know, give it to her, and it was passed to her by her sister. And when she unrolled it and showed it to everybody, they gave me a standing ovation. People in the restaurant were clapping. I'm like, listen, you know, I don't need any joy. Let's continue with the celebration of her. But that little act of kindness stirred her soul because I was a total stranger. I want to be able to do more of that. I want to be able to do more of that. I'm going to be intentional about loving and giving great words. I took just 10 seconds today. There's a young lady, and she came through such great hardship. Her parents are both on crack real bad. They were homeless, living in cars. I can remember some of the incredible things she was going through as a small child, 3, 4, 5 years old. And she's brilliant. I've often said to her, you need to be a nurse. I tried to give her a strategy of how she could use the system to, you know, engage the system to pay for her nursing. But she didn't have enough confidence. I said, are you kidding me? You know, you're a straight-A student. You can be a nurse. So instead of taking 1 year and becoming a licensed practical nurse, which was the first step into nursing, she became a medical assistant, which is like a step down in the step of cost. It's been 7 years. Every time I see her, I say, you're a registered nurse, you're a registered nurse. Well, I haven't seen her in about 3 years. So on Facebook, somehow, I just thought about her today, and I went over and clicked on her Facebook, and I said, your RN is calling you. When are you going to go back to school and get your registered nurse? She Facebooked me back instantly and said, oh, my God, this is like a miracle. This is a sign from God. I'm like, well, what are you talking about? I'm just sending you a word of affirmation and encouragement. She said, no, you don't understand. For a month now, I've been thinking about going back to get my nursing. I had just prayed about it over the weekend, and here you write me this, and we haven't seen each other for years. And I know God is using you to tell me to start my journey again. Imagine that. So we'll open up the lines. I want you to testify. I know there's some stuff I need to hear. Those of you who've been so excited about calling in. So the lines are open now. If you got some testimonies to share, let's share them and let's celebrate this Valentine's Day together. What's going on in your world? Does anybody have anything to share? Well, listen, if you don't have anything to share, go ahead.
Hello?
We're here.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you fine. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, this is Israel calling from Georgia.
Hey, Miss Israel. Oh, my goodness. This is like too wild for me. Ladies and gentlemen, I have the distinct pleasure. I can't just let this lady roll in on the line and start sharing her testimony. I got to tell you who she is. In 2011, my team was competing in Monroeville, Pennsylvania, for, we were just trying to get certification for a merit award. And we were selected to win the gold medal in environmental innovations for the United States. This young lady watched us in competitions for 3 days. She was a cheerleader. She even took the team us, took us out to dinner. She's a businesswoman. She does all kind of unique marketing. She introduced me to Kevin Harrington of Shark Tank. She coordinated all of this activity to get us a private audience with him. Israel, I'm not going to tell the whole story because I can't believe you're on this line. I haven't seen her in a couple of years, and so I'm so ecstatic with joy. You got to tell them the testimony. Just tell them whatever you want to tell them about the Dr. A story, because we have so many together from competition and Shark Tank. And
well, all I can say is that meeting you was truly divinely orchestrated. You can hear me, correct? You hear me?
Oh, you're coming across loud and clear. Go ahead.
It was divinely orchestrated because I was there and we were, she and I met in the room, the main room where Debbie Fields was doing her speech at the Impact show that year. And I wanted to meet Debbie Fields because I had a small development and marketing company and had contracts with retail stores to do in-store demonstrations and come to the Impact show just to find new products to learn about that I could possibly demonstrate in stores, give myself a cutting edge within my own business. And originally, I wasn't even supposed to go. My brother had invented something at the time, and I was trying to get him to go to Impact, but he wasn't interested in going. So I felt like maybe it was time for me to go. I happened to have enough money, and I went, and I met Dr. Rhoda Zianalali right there, telling everyone about her flat battery technology, and it wasn't even the Nano then. It was just a basic green flat battery that had come up from being a BioShield. And she and I instantly connected. We had a true spiritual connection. I could feel the anointing on everything she was saying. I loved every word that was coming out of her mouth. And then when she was doing her demonstrations with her, I believe it was her niece, right? Wasn't that your niece up there with you?
Yes, she's my great niece. Matter of fact, she was my great niece. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they were there together, and they had a booth, and she told me it was last minute she got this booth, and I was like, wow, really? You know, it was just meant to be, and so I decided to come at the last minute. And that year, she and I made a great connection. Like I said, you know, I felt led to take her out to lunch and pay for everything, not realizing at the time that, you know, it really was a faith walk for her to even be there, you know.
Oh,
and and I tell you, every time I've ever done anything with you, there's always been so much spiritual warfare around everything. Because 2 to 3 years later, was that 3 years later when I came back?
Yeah.
To the Impact show.
Hold it right there. Before you go on, we got to back it up a little bit. I want to tell everybody that Impact, celebrities come there, business personalities that you see on TV are there, George Foreman, and we just happened to be in this forum with Debbie Fields. This is the Mrs. Debbie Fields. You know her. Because if you've been around in the United States for any length of time, you've probably eaten one of her cookies. This is a woman who started cookies with a $20,000 line. She started a specialty gourmet cookie line, and her husband told her she wouldn't even make $50 the first day. And by 3 o'clock in the afternoon, she hadn't even made $50, so she put a lock on the door and took the cookies outside, started giving them away, and people came in, and in the last 2 hours of her business day, she sold $75 worth of cookies. And then fast forward 10 years later, she sells it for millions of dollars, and her husband's mouth is open. And she said to me, she saw the technology. She said, Dr. Lally, you're a genius. She said, you're going to get a lot of no's, and people are not going to believe in you, and people are going to be jealous of you. She said, but this technology is too important to the world, and you cannot give up.
Mm-hmm.
No matter the sacrifice. Remember, And Israel was standing right there when she was telling me. You cannot get, you're going to get a lot of no's, but you're going to get that yes one day. So you just keep the journey moving forward. Now you can tell them what happened a couple of years later.
Okay, and another little pin on that. See, Dr. Lally's technology was not the only form of a bioharmonic or some type of bioharmonic-like product that was invented there. I think there was at least another three or four other inventors that had something in that category. Wasn't it true?
Yeah, there were
several. At least four that I saw when I walked the floor as a business owner. And none of them won anything.
No, because when the judges came, they had us all meet up in that central hall where the judges are, and they wanted to see how their technology compared to the flat battery. And we won against all of them. That's why we got the gold medal. That's why they didn't win anything.
And the one guy who had invented some sort of light or something like that, he was trying to connect with you to use your technology to enhance his technology. And I don't know whatever happened to him. Wasn't it a light or some device he had?
Yeah, he had a light system that was supposed to emit EMF, but, you know, the frequency system, too, that's what people have to understand. Some people get monitors that exclude the frequency of their system. So when they're monitoring it, it doesn't discern the frequency. Therefore, it looks like the machine is really working, when in fact the machine that they're measuring with doesn't even pick up anything from them. And so when you can use kinetics, apply kinesiology, muscle response testing, and two-finger Bedore testing, you can kind of snuff out all of that. Because that's going to show you exactly what's happening at the cellular level in the body. And you can see whether or not technologies will hold your strength or they're good for the body or they're not. So that's what you were seeing. But we won against all of those people.
Yeah, beat them up so bad they had to go home with the tail tucked between their legs.
That was why I was telling people, impact is no joke. There was at least 25,000 people there the year we met, too. There was over 1,200 inventors from 44 nations. It was massive in this massive convention hall that you had to, you know, it took a couple hours to walk it going just one way in there. I mean, there's thousands and thousands of people, and that's just on one day. Probably in the course of that 3 days. You know, there was close.
I think I spent all of those 3 days walking the floor, and I still didn't see every last invention. But I got to see the majority of them and did interviews with the majority of them, and those who wanted me to have a sample of what they had so I could consider it, they would give me a sample of what they had. And so for me, coming from a business owner perspective, looking for new products to market and within my own company, it was a really great experience for that. You know, and for you, I'm sure it was a great experience for you as far as being rewarded, acknowledged, recognized, and making connections just that year alone.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
And then we fast forward. What year was this? 2013?
It had to be. Yes.
I think it was 2013. I go back to the show, and this is not a year where Dr. Lally is an exhibitor, but I said, "Oh, Rhoda, I'm coming up. I'm going back to the Impact show this year, and I want you to come up there." And she was like, "You were busy at the time." I'm like, "Well, I don't know, Israel. I'm gonna have this and that and other do. I'm gonna try to run through there for a while, and then I've got to go because you had to fit somebody's house or something." Right, in Ohio somewhere? So she had an appointment to make. But on that, I believe it was the second day, I was in the lounge and in the VIP lounge with all the other CEOs and the organizers, and Kevin Harrington just kind of waltzed through. And, you know, I'm one of those type of people. I generally do well with meeting people who are well-known. You know, I generally do well with them. And long haul,
because you got to tell everybody who this is. Kevin Harrington of Shark Tank. Waltz is in the lounge where Israel is. Zeke, so you got, when you see his name, you got to say Zeke Evan Arrington from Shark Tank. Now you can go on.
Okay. So I just, we just introduced ourselves, and I was like, "Who? I'm Israel, and you are." And he said, "I'm Kevin Harrington from the Shark Tank." You know, I gave him the courtesy of formally introducing himself to me. You know, even though I was in some way familiar with his face, because he was one of the keynote speakers that drew crowds to the show that year. But you know, so he was kind of a big wig that year, just like Debbie Fields was a big wig, you know, a few years earlier. And so we just sat and we just chatted really quickly and we really connected. And I said, you know what, I have a really great friend who has an invention that I would like for you to hear about. And I said, she actually displayed here a few years ago and she won the gold medal, and I believe it was the Environment at the time. And she was the only American to win a gold medal, as I understand it, in the whole show out of all the people that were there. And I'm going to call on the phone right now. So I ended up calling and putting Rhoda on a conference call, and that's how she met Kevin Harrington. And they hit it off well. He says, oh, we're going out to this club tonight, which is like a VIP club for all the speakers and organizers. At the time, I didn't know that's who it was exclusive to, because the people who were were bringing us in and registering us were telling everyone who was a business owner that they could come to it when I first came through the doors. Well, something happened along the way in communication where they stopped telling business people that because they wanted it to be more exclusive than that. And so I didn't know that. All I knew was I was already told about it, and I thought I was formally at least almost invited. And then they were lying and saying that you needed a ticket to get in, which was, we learned later, was a fabricated lie. But they were telling people you have to have a ticket. And I'm like, how do I get a ticket? I'm one of those type of people, I'm going to get what I want when I want it. You know what I'm saying? Especially when it's this important. Now, I'm like, Kevin Harrington, I made a connection between her and Kevin. And the reality is, I know at least within the last year before this event, you were trying to get on the Shark Tank. And they gave you the snow job and didn't let you on the show and picked other inventors. And they didn't give you an opportunity to be displayed and seen. So I'm like, hey, God got a way of working some things out when he really wants you. If he wants you to meet somebody, you're going to meet him, you know. So here we are, and I'm like, I've made this arrangement, and she's driving all the way back here. I don't know how many hours drive to come back here to Pennsylvania from her appointment. And I've asked her to come. Kevin has invited her to come. And the people that were escorting Kevin, they were very protective of his time and very protective of his space, more than I thought they needed to be, because he had invited us to come to the event. And I showed up along with other people who had been invited officially. I was like, I didn't know y'all had to have tickets. They're like, no, you don't have to have tickets. Just get on the bus. When the bus comes around, and one of my girlfriends who was there, who I had met a few years earlier in PEX, I had run into her all the years before. I forgot her name, however, but she and I always click really well. She said, come on with me and my husband. You get on our bus. We're all going together. So I'm like, oh, okay. So I'm on the bus with them, and the organizers who had sat in my face and lied straight to my face were looking at each other, because they're like, oh, okay, she's on the bus now. You know, because they were trying to keep me and a number of other participants who were business owners out of this special meeting. And so I get there, not at this time, I'm not realizing the significance that I was even able to get in after they lied, because at this point I didn't realize they were lying. It wasn't until after everything happened that we put all the pieces together and figured out that they were trying to keep certain people out. And then I was like, well, Kevin, and I was telling them the truth. I said, Kevin Harrington invited me, and Dr. Lolly, she's coming. Now, they're still assuming that Dr. Lolly is one of the exhibitors there, which it's completely forbidden for you to be a business owner and invite an exhibitor to a private exclusive meeting. And they didn't understand that she wasn't exhibiting that year. She had exhibited in one some years earlier. She was just a guest coming through my company to make this meeting with Kevin Harrington. And so we get there, and I'm kind of hobnobbing and everything. Before I know it, one of the ladies comes up to me and threatens me, telling me that if I try to even go up and speak to Kevin Harrington again, because I saw him and I gave him his room to hobnob. I wasn't pressing him because I knew Rudd was a little bit late. So I just said, hey, I'm here. You know, he's like, okay, good. You know, you're here. Where's your friend? I said, she's on her way. She's just caught in traffic, but she is on her way because she was in another appointment. He said, well, all right. Well, you know, when she comes in, bring her over to me, da 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 da. After that, they come up to me and tell me if I even go up and attempt to speak to Kevin Harrington again, they were going to ask me to leave the whole event. And walked off abruptly and left me sitting there looking like a complete fool. And I'm like, okay, what? That's when I started to know something, like really know something was really wrong. Like, why would you tell me I have to leave? Why? I mean, why? I could, at that point, I couldn't even understand what had happened. Come to find out later on, they assumed that I was trying to smuggle an exhibitor in to get special time with Kevin Harrington and do a special pitch. And it was not even that way. And they were like, well, we feel like we need to protect his time and everything because we have an agreement with him and we can't just – now this is not his time to service the exhibitors. And I'm like, what are you talking about, exhibitors? She's not an exhibitor. She is my friend, and she's coming to this meeting because Kevin – invited both of us. He wants to talk to her. And so I was like, I don't care if y'all tell me I can't come up and speak to this man. I pushed through all the people hanging around him. I said, Kevin, we need to talk right now. You need to tell me right here and right now, are we supposed to be here and are you waiting for me and Dr. Alali? And he says, yes, I'm waiting for you all. Is she coming? I was like, she's still on her way, but the people around here are saying that I'm not supposed to be talking to you. And if I speak to you again, they're going to kick me out of this party. You know, so I need to understand what is going on, you know. And so it was a whole bunch of confusion in essence. By the time Dr. Lyle got there, it had more or less settled down, but there was still lots of tension. They said, you get 5 minutes with him, and then that's it. 5 minutes. Remember that?
I remember. I do remember.
And so, and they're standing there, and they sent people to listen and eavesdrop on our conversation. We're shuffled out onto the patio deck of this this club event, and they've got people who work at Impex eavesdropping on our conversation and monitoring the conversation we're having with Mr. Harrington. And I'm just like, it was just too much. But at least she made the introduction. She was able to show him what her technology was capable of doing. She made an impression, and that at least started a relationship with her and Kevin Harrington. And I'll let you pick it up from there because I don't know how everything ended up working out. Because I know you said now you're reconnected with him, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
Well, he basically said, you know, Dr. Lally, you know, he's excited about the technology. Matter of fact, he and several of his lawyers and his marketing team, the people that travel with him, they all have the technology in their phones. And so his guru consultant was in England and basically felt that there was no way a nanotechnology could do all the things that the bioharmonizer does. You know, the nanos does so many things. And they wanted quantifying devices, and as you remember, we didn't have them at that time. Now that we've connected with NASA, he told us when we got that connection to come back and knock on the door. So, you know, I've just been trying to deal with, I've got some people that have me so focused getting certain goals met and tasks done because we're positioning for funding, and that's where I've been there. So, you know, putting together getting all the T's crossed and I's dots, but we're ready for him now. Everything that he needed for us, we're ready. But, yes, he loves the technology. He loves the net. Put it right in his iPhone, and he loved it. So, yes.
And so, and for all the effort that you went through, because I know it was months of trying to get through the interview process with the people at the Shark Tank show who were the ones who were the gatekeepers to keep you either from or cause you to get into the door to be put before this panel of sharks. You know, after all that experience, for it to just come to you so easily, and that just does not happen to everybody. You know what I'm saying? Things like this, that just does not happen.
You truly were a point strategist. If you hadn't been there, because like you said, I had already been there. Well, I was in Cleveland trying to come there. And when you called me up and said, listen, I got an appointment with you with Kevin Harrington at Shark Tank, I rescheduled the appointment. I said, listen, I'm going to have to come back to Cleveland. I got to run over to Pittsburgh. Unfortunately, the two cities are so close together. I would have been able to get there in about 2 hours and 15 minutes, but I came during rush hour traffic, and that was just, you know, locked down. But Kevin Harrington is extremely personable. He's very approachable. And, you know, we were just going through due protocol. He didn't really understand that the people had, you know, they had taken his calendar and their own security detail was such that they were eliminating. They had a certain protocol, I'll put it that way. So, like, Israel, you are very professional, and I know they ruffled your feathers a lot, but you are a key strategist. You handled everything with respectful regard, and he appreciated that you know, you didn't, as they say, you had an invitation to the monkey zoo, but you reclined the invitation because you knew you'd become a monkey too. And they did some kind of a brass and crass and disrespectful.
Oh, they were horrible. They were horrible.
You know, you.
I can't even give them any little part of good. They were awful. I stopped going to Impex after that.
Okay, and Michelle Obama says it best: when people go low, you go high. Don't let them strip you of your dignity, and you certainly were exemplary of that. And so, listen, we have really shot over time, but does anybody, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. I was giving you a shout-out earlier. I didn't know if you were going to make it in or not. But this lady is so resourceful, and she knows so many people in the South that we're getting, it's like a rebirth of a nation down there. She's so excited about the solar technologies, and maybe next week I want to introduce you to some people who are listening in tonight from Canada and from, you know, your good friend Elder Clark. He's on the show from time to time. He's getting an honorary doctorate for his service, and we're excited about that for him. So, everybody, if there's no other testimonies, we're just going to say good night. Happy Valentine's Day. Go exercise your language of love. Are there any other testimonies tonight? Well, if not, I want to say happy Valentine's Day to everyone. Good night. Thank you, Nathan. Thank you, Ida. Thank you, my Canadian family. Thank you, my folks in Colombia. Thank you, Israel, and my folks in Atlanta. Good night, everyone. And Cincinnati and Cleveland. I forgot you were listening in tonight.
Thank you very much. Happy Valentine's Day to all.
Okay. Thank you, Mario.
Thank you, Dr. Lally.
You're welcome, Miss Ida.
Thank
you.
Good night.
Good night.